Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Hilary Jamron, who is the author of Surrealistic Trials, Surviving My Life After Death. Hilary died from a drug overdose at the age of 18, journeyed to the other side, and she's written a fascinating book on multidimensional realities and has had a journey that many of us will never have in this lifetime, but perhaps in the next. Thanks, Hilary, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, Hilary, when I was a medical student, I was did some time at a psychiatric hospital, and I would be back talking with the paranoid schizophrenics who were told to me to
people.
Be... Right. They were told, I was told that they were quite dangerous, but I had a similar experience to you. I could hear the voices, and so as long as the voices were not particularly threatening toward me, I knew that I was perfectly okay. What was interesting is, though, I always kept myself on the side of the door. Your advice about that is absolutely correct. Never put a paranoid schizophrenic between you and the door.
Right, that's right.
So anyway, what would the psychiatrists think if they knew that these realities are actually real, that they're not just in somebody's mind, they are actually able to be perceived by others who have the sight and hearing to do so? Would that change psychiatry? I think it might.
I think it might very well change psychiatry. The psychiatrist with whom I worked for many, many years understood that on some level, not a level that he would verbalize.
Right.
But he did understand that on some level. And I think that it's, as you say, if it were talked about more, that there are other realities that... It's interesting to me that you could hear them, the other voices.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Could you also...
Not so much. I didn't have the sight yet. I developed the sight later, but, you know, I was born with the ability to hear and sometimes see.
Huh.
I remember seeing the little beings, the fairies and the things that flit around very early. And, of course, I would know when people were going to die and not know how I knew that.
Right.
These kind of things. But, let's talk a little bit about how you developed your view into multidimensional reality. Because, you know, I've interviewed just about everybody who's written a book on near-death experience. And this is not that uncommon to come back from a near-death experience with significant shifts in perception.
No, I'm sure it's not. And the term near-death experience is not one that I particularly like, but it seems to be the one people use.
Mm-hmm.
How my shift happened, I really have no conscious awareness of what that process was. And I've lived with that since I was 18. I'm 60.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. I don't remember really what it's like not to have multidimensional realities.
Mm-hmm.
And I do know that I can control sort of where I am and look to where I want to be. It's kind of hard to describe, don't you think?
It is, because you experience them simultaneously sometimes, which is hard to... It's almost like being able to watch two channels at the same time.
Which I totally cannot do.
All right. So basically, when I'm just intrigued that you were guided into the role... Was your title like more of a social worker or a... actual psychiatric worker? I mean, what was your job title when you were working?
I was
clinician.
I was a clinician, yeah.
Okay.
And I ran
What a fascinating job.
Oh,
I mean,
I loved it.
With your abilities. My goodness.
I loved it. Every single day, I was excited to get up and go to work. I did have to retire early because of health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I miss it every single day. You know, there's... there's something very real about getting up and being able to go work with schizophrenics all day.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get to travel to different places. And it's
right.
fun. You know, it's fun, and we can, if, you know, if people are having realities that might be dangerous to themselves or to the community,
mm-hmm.
We can go there, and sometimes we can go in and lead them back out to a safer place, and sometimes we can't.
Why don't you tell the story about the truckload of dynamite? That's a particularly interesting one.
Yeah, interesting guy. A young guy, he was about 18, 19 at the time. I think he was about 19. And he was thinking, well, what he heard in his head was these ninja turtle sewer rats from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And the king of the sewer rats told him that they had tunneled from New York to this little tiny town in Idaho, and they were
mm-hmm.
going to come up outside of this apartment building that happened to be across the street from the school.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to come up armed. They were not friendly people. They were, you know, his description was they were dangerous, and they were going to come
mm-hmm.
up armed, and they were going to start with the little town of McCall, and then they were going to take over the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a phone call from somebody who worked at the school. It's a little town. Somebody who worked at the school said, and I used the name Joey, Joey's driving, you know, he's been across the street for a long time, and there's something strange going on. I picked up my keys, got my car, and drove over there. And he had been up all night digging a trench and burying dynamite. And when I
mm-hmm.
got there, he said, oh, you're just in time. I need to take care of these fuses. And, of course, I didn't know. I knew that he had a purpose. I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But really, all we have to do is ask. And I did ask, of course, and he had buried about 40-foot trench. It was a 40-foot trench, about a foot deep, 40 feet long, and he had dynamite buried there, and
mm-hmm.
he was waiting for them to emerge.
Right.
And, you know, that was really not a pretty picture.
No.
So I mean, I can read from the book. I can.
Mm-hmm.
Can you want me to continue to explain, or what works better for you?
Sure. Well, I mean, you had some awareness of his reality.
Right.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
What
did you see and feel when you went into his world?
Well, I think that, you know, when we're working with people who are delusional, quote unquote, that they have to trust us enough to allow us into their world.
Right.
I think that's a big piece. And they have to know that we know that their reality is real. And I think that's why
mm-hmm.
a lot of psychiatry doesn't do real well, because
mm-hmm.
of the question, that whole issue of maybe not believing in other realities.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it occurs to me, I'm sure you're familiar with the Carlos Castaneda's material.
Oh, yeah.
And some of the other metaphysics material.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are constantly creating. I mean, if you can remember
right.
your dreams, you know your dreams are intricate, detailed, you know, they have you know, they are just as detailed and intricate as our waking reality is.
Absolutely.
And there is something in the Carlos Castaneda's material and other metaphysical text that indicate that we are constantly creating from the assemblage point. You know, wherever the assemblage point is, if it moves, we have a different reality. So maybe schizophrenics just have an assemblage point that moves frequently. So at every point, a reality can be created. And what you and I have the ability to do in some cases is to move with them. We can move our assemblage point to where they are so that we can perceive what they're perceiving.
I think
that's my theory.
And I think that sounds like it makes a lot of sense. I think it's something that we can all learn to do if we want to. But I think there's such a stigma about mental illness, and particularly schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That it scares people. And fear is, fear in my world is an illusion to begin with. We're not born with fear. It's something we learn as we grow up. You know, get off that fence, you're going to fall, you're going to fall in the water, whatever it is that we're being warned against is, it's all learned. And, I think one of the things that I learned while I was on the other side is that fear isn't real. I mean, what is there really to be afraid of?
We're eternal. I mean, even
exactly.
If we get bit by a snake and die, we come back, so it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter.
In the long run. I mean, you can suffer more because you don't judge your environment correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You reach down to touch a snake, and it happens to be poisonous, and you get bit and you die. Well, you get, say you're 6 years old. Well, you lose 6 years, but, you come back.
You come back and you learn something during those, during the period that you're here.
You have a life review and, you learn maybe you need to pay attention to your environment.
Right. Maybe next time you don't lean down and touch something like that.
Right. Exactly.
But I don't think, nothing is a waste. Long as we keep moving forward.
And that's why we're told not to judge anybody. I'm sure with the story that you tell in your book, you've been the focus of a lot of people's judgment. And in my world, what I get to learn is that everybody has their own life path, and I have no clue how they're doing on it.
Right.
No clue.
Right. Right.
That's between them and their soul.
I agree. So how can we judge? Who are we?
How can we judge,
Who are we to step in there and say, these sewer rats are silly and, you need to get locked up and drugged. That would be ridiculous. I think those 20 years that I spent working with schizophrenics, I learned so much from them.
Mm-hmm.
I learned so much about trust, about realities, and about life and death, and just everything. They are, you can learn so much when we just accept that all realities are real. It's all real. Whatever somebody is thinking or doing that might be different from what we're thinking or doing is real. And there's a part of me that has a lot of trouble understanding how society can judge and label and shun any particular group of people. It's ridiculous. And certainly I've been called a drug addict. I've been called a space cadet. I've been called a lot of things that could be perceived as sort of negative. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what other people think. It matters what we think and that we be true to ourselves. I think that's the only thing that matters. It's our path.
Yeah, I think that's very true. My mother said to me that she was just very, I guess, I wouldn't say impressed, but she noticed more than anything, especially compared to other people in our family, I didn't care what anybody thought. It didn't matter. And that lesson, I think I learned that in another lifetime. I don't think that's what I'm learning in this lifetime. But this idea that your value somehow is in other people's minds
yeah.
is insane.
It's ridiculous.
First of all, they have no conception of even what your lessons are.
Right.
You know, you were in a coma. You were rigid in a coma. I mean, physical therapists could hardly move you without excruciating pain. Your body was in a state that nobody would have ever thought that you could have gotten out of that bed. Your doctor certainly didn't.
No, I was
and if you had not, if you had not through your soul, mm-hmm. because that's who gave you the direction to get up out of that bed, your soul had you demand a physical therapist, and they reluctantly sent you one.
Absolutely.
If that had not happened, you would still be in that bed.
I would. You know, it's
well, you'd
really...
probably be dead by now. Obviously, I mean, because you don't. Well, maybe you don't.
Well,
you never
I'm,
know. But being in the bed is a lot more dangerous than being out of the bed. Just this is the doctor in me speaking.
It's
because
really
of
very
complications.
Refreshing. It's really refreshing to hear. To hear you say that, it's so refreshing to hear you say that. I was paralyzed from the neck down,
mm-hmm.
and you know, in one reality, I didn't. In the person who was laying in the bed paralyzed really took a long time to understand that. The person, you know, the reality that was flitting around, the other realities, the one that was flying around the room, my guardian
mm-hmm.
angel, the other places that I could go from that bed and that I did go,
mm-hmm.
understood that. But the person in that bed did not have a clue.
Right.
It took a long time for consciousness to come back to the reality that was in the bed enough
mm-hmm.
to even demand that physical therapist.
Right.
And I don't think, and to this day, that person really didn't do that.
No, it was done through the soul.
Precisely.
It was, yeah.
How nice. Because
that was what was needed.
Nobody's ever understood that before.
Yeah.
The first person that has, wow, is great. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and I've been deathly ill. I've been deathly ill with, you know, in fact, I had to call my spiritual father and say, am I going to die? And his answer is, no, you're going to feel like you're going to die, but you're not going to die. Okay,
oh.
I was that sick. Okay,
oh,
so for five
yeah.
weeks, I could hardly get out of the bed. I had to have people help me to the bathroom. I was on IVs. I refused to go to the hospital. I'm kind of like you, incredibly
oh.
stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on oxygen IVs. I had some sort of a pneumonia going on that was
wow.
viral. It wasn't something that was easy to treat.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, what I learned from that is that if I will follow my guidance,
right.
I was given a dream. It was kind of neat.
Yeah.
I was given a dream that there were, like, Christmas lights, and I was following the Christmas lights along a trail, and it went, you know, underwater, into tunnels, up mountains, and we finally ended up on this island, and on the island was everything I needed, food, books, you know, TV, things that you enjoy, you know, things
mm-hmm.
that, if all I had was that, I'd be perfectly happy, you know.
Me too.
And so the message of that dream was, the lights are your guidance, and they'll take you into dark places, into light places, but that nothing is ever threatened. You will always be perfectly okay.
That's so
and
hard.
That's a dream I had when I could barely move.
Wow. And we are always safe.
We're perfectly
safe.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that this is just fascinating to hear you say this. This is a conversation. I've not found anybody to share this with, that having no fear is the way we can all be.
We can, but we have to have that connection. The connection to that part of you that is outside space and time,
mm-hmm.
that part that is connected probably to all that is, that is a connection that needs to be strengthened at every moment we can.
And what I've thought about a lot since I've been talking about the book is that a lot of people meditate, you know, to explain multidimensional realities, you know, the best way that I've been able to do it is through the analogy using meditation. People you know, we sit, we meditate, we're in the room, in our bodies, we meditate, go somewhere else, right? And so when we're, when people are done meditating, I guess they go back to their bodies, but I mean, I think a good way to get that word out there is imagine just staying out there, leaving a part of you on this day that you meditate where it was. And then the next day, meditating and going somewhere else and leave another part of you somewhere else. Well, what would happen then?
Well, I've had a number of patients, probably at least 30 of them now, tell me that, and some of my friends, tell me that one woman who was my spiritual student at one time said that, called me up not too long ago and said, "You've been in my bedroom every morning working with me for the last month." Of course, I have no awareness of doing this. But she was very, very ill, and you know, I assume that I'm there doing something with her or for her, or, you know, trying to get her past some sort of point. So it's clear to me, even though in this conscious reality I have no memory of being in any of these different places, and some of these people don't even know me. I mean, some of these people have never met me. And yet they call me up and tell me I was in their bedroom.
Interesting. And
so, so obviously these 30 people aren't crazy. I have no memory of it. Sometimes I have a little bit of a memory if I know them. Like I'll know deep down that something's wrong. I probably won't know what. But I'll have a feeling that maybe they're not well. So there is some sort of a connection. But what I think's happening is that as we go into the higher vibrational reality that this world is becoming, we're going to have more conscious memory of our multidimensional reality that already exists.
I think so, too. I think, I mean, I see different, I catch glimpses throughout my days of, and more as time goes on, another place that I live. I know exactly what it looks like. I've never seen it. I mean, I don't have any awareness of having seen it as I sit where I am now. But I know that I go there. I know that I live in this adobe house with blue trim on it on the second floor. I could draw a perfect picture of it. And other places, other multidimensional existences that I know are real, and I can glimpse them. I can call them, you know, if I feel like looking at one or exploring it. It's not difficult to go there.
That's right.
And I do think it's a matter of just letting it in.
It is. You've had a number of health challenges, and so have I. And I want to tell a story about how the multidimensional world saved my life.
Okay, great.
We have a meditation group that meets weekly, probably since 1990. So it's a long-term meditation group. And one of the members got a message from Michael the Archangel that it was extremely important that I take ivermectin. Well, you know, he was a physicist. He didn't know what ivermectin is. I don't know that he even really heard the term. It's an antiparasitic, an antiparasitic. Well, I had been eating lox and bagels at a chain restaurant because I like them. But no other, no, and so I know that was the source because I don't eat anything else that is raw. So, I just took the ivermectin not knowing why I needed to. I'm a doctor. I wrote myself the script. I took the ivermectin, and I broke out with these red bug bites, these big red bug bites. They were kind of like, you know, almost 4 inches across. And then Monsters Inside Me was wanting to shoot the series here for me being on Monsters Inside Me for mold and breast implants.
Oh.
So, but I had never seen the show. So the producers kept emailing me and telling me I had to see the show before they did the shoot. So I TiVo'd it.
Mm-hmm.
And just one episode. So I'm watching it, and I look, and the lady has great big bug bites.
Whoa.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Well, this is something called gnathostomiasis. Now, gnathostomiasis is a nasty creature that lives in salmon. So lox and bagels could
right.
be the culprit. It never went to my gut. It just went straight into my left lung through my esophagus. And there it was trying to cause lung cancer. That's what it does. Okay? And my clairvoyance around me kept saying, you're getting lung cancer. You know, you're getting, and I'd smoked 20 years, so, you know, this can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so I took the ivermectin. I was treated by a naturopath who broke up the parasites with some electromagnetic devices. And then I spent 9 months treating the natho with three different antiparasitics using muscle testing.
Wow.
And finally got him killed. Now, what's good is natho doesn't have babies. They can't have babies in humans. We're not their primary host. So that's good. So however many natho I ate, that was how many I had to kill. Now, the bug bites were the worm coming out of the skin.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
But without taking the ivermectin, I would have never had the bug bites because they would have just caused lung cancer, and you and I would not be having this conversation.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So, multidimensional reality. I mean, some people believe in Michael the Archangel. Other people probably don't because they can't see or hear him, right?
Well, the woman who helped me put this book together, she
mm-hmm.
is orchestrated by Leah Stinnett.
Mm-hmm.
Leah is in constant contact with Michael the Archangel, and
mm-hmm.
without her, I would not have been able to organize this book at all. I mean, I can write, but I can't organize myself to get out the door. I remember my dog walks
right.
out the door and sits down and waits because he knows
yeah.
I'm going to come in four times.
Right.
But, you know, Leah has a lot to say about Michael the Archangel and the
mm-hmm.
power and the grace, and
yeah.
I certainly trust her.
Well, I believe I wouldn't be here if Michael had not told Ron
mm-hmm.
about the ivermectin, because there would be no
incredible.
Reason for me to even suspect anything until the cancer had spread,
oh
you know. So in any case, that's how multidimensional realities, and you know that's true. People have dreams that they have cancer,
mm-hmm.
and they have nothing there, but yet the doctor does a biopsy anyway just because the person's, like, you know, bugging them.
Right.
And there's cancer in it.
Right.
You know, I mean, these stories do happen. We do, in either in our dream world or in the imaginary world. That's what my friends say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my imaginary world, Michael the Archangel told Susan to take ivermectin. You know?
That's what they call it. Oh,
they call it my imaginary world. Yeah. So, but anyway, but it's so interesting to me that when you're supposed to be here, when you still have a job to do, which I
right.
do,
right.
They go to some pretty incredible lengths to keep you here.
No question about it. My daughter lives in Belize, and she's had trouble with parasites as well.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, she came back to the States and went through all Western medicine, all the tests,
mm-hmm.
everything that anybody.
But you can't find them.
No,
the Western tests aren't going to be able to find them. You got to do it by muscle testing. There's three drugs. I know a whole bunch about this. There's three drugs, and all three drugs are pretty non-toxic compared to other drugs,
mm-hmm.
including antibiotics, antifungals, and, you know, the antivirals. Okay, these drugs are not that bad. And so, you cannot find these parasites. These parasites, unless they're in the gut and reproducing,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to find them. There's no test to find them. So basically, we do things by muscle testing. And
right.
that is, you know, every month, well, we muscle test which drug, how long, and then at the end of the course, see if they're dead by muscle testing again. You know, you got to do it like that. But parasites are pretty easy to get rid of because they respond well to these drugs. Of course, you sometimes have to keep bouncing around,
right?
You know, like I did. I had to bounce around. And I knew because I kept having bug bites. In other words, the last bug bite with the parasite coming out, I knew that I was okay, although I have one left, but I know that it's dead. I know it's dead. I know where it is. It itches sometimes.
How long were you? Did you treat yourself?
9 months.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And I had about 100 natho, according to the muscle test.
Hmm.
And they didn't reproduce, but I had to get rid of all 100.
Right.
Because they're, I mean, natho, I look it up. I mean, you can go blind. If they get in your brain, you can die. You know, they're not friendly. They have big teeth. They have this big mouth and these teeth. Yeah, you should look up natho on the internet.
It's really scary looking.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's so interesting because I wrote an email to the restaurant because I knew that I got it there.
Mm-hmm.
And they never answered me. And I'd written them some other emails, and they always answered me. But I'm pretty sure that they investigated and found it was true and cleaned up their act. So, I mean, they probably were buying. They weren't doing it on purpose, obviously.
Right.
But anyway, I hope that not that many people were affected. But, you know, probably a lot of people were.
I'm sure they were.
Yeah.
And how do we know these things? My daughter, you know, after having spent a year or so, I live in Bellingham, so she went to some of the best, quote-unquote, best doctors in the country,
mm-hmm.
University of Washington, so on and so
uh-huh.
forth. And she was called to go back to Belize to a shaman
mm-hmm.
in the jungle.
Right.
And that's what she did. And this is, you know, this is a young woman who had gone from running marathons.
Mm-hmm. Parasites are devastating. They really are.
Oh, to not being able to get out of bed and get herself
I know.
A piece of toast.
I have patients just
do?
Like that. I do, yeah. See, I have my boards in integrative holistic medicine. I was one of the founding diplomats of that, as well as plastic surgery. So I treat Morgellons disease, which is like full of parasites. And basically, because of my personal experience, I have no problem treating parasitic disease because, you know, I realize there is no test for it.
Mm-hmm.
There was no test ever for natho. It never got in my gut.
You're just supposed to be here.
Yeah.
And
so
like my daughter,
and I have
I
have patients who have parasites that have been like to so many doctors. Nobody can figure it out. They
right.
come here. They don't weigh, I mean, they weigh nothing, you know,
right.
they've got down to a very low body weight, very ill.
Mm-hmm.
I treat them, now, they usually have more than just parasites. They usually have parasites and viruses, their immune system's down, you know, because
right.
it's an immune defect that is associated either secondarily or primarily with a lot of this. And you treat the immune system, you treat the gut, you treat everything that needs to be treated, and they get better.
Incredible.
And all Hopkins and Emory and Mayo can do is tell them they have a disease. They don't know what it is, but it looks like they're dying because they go to those places first.
And that's exactly what they told her. We don't know what it is.
Exactly.
But she's not going to be around much longer.
Yeah.
So she got on a plane and went to the jungle and
mm-hmm.
is doing some acupuncture, doing some herbs, some medicines
mm-hmm.
that I've never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And she's doing better.
Yeah.
But that's because she, like us, has a lot to teach, has a lot to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And she can't die. She can't die from this life right now because she has too much to do.
Right.
And I think that's the way it is. Those of us,
mm-hmm.
as you said, those of us who have work to do, we're not going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wasn't going to stay in that bed. I was going to get up and move on. And I remember thinking how ridiculous these people were. And that was how it was. I thought, you know, you guys are fools. What's wrong with you? I'm not going to lay here.
Mm-hmm.
I have things to do. Get out of my way. That's exactly what I thought. Get out of my way.
Right.
And you know, as it turned out, they did finally get out of my way, but
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, as far as my consciousness in this body goes, that's what I remember, is thinking, would you get the hell out of my way? I have so much mm-hmm. to do, and you are just bothering me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not long after that, I was up, I was falling, I fell down a few times. We all fall down a few times. Mm-hmm. I still fall down. And, you know, move on with life. And, you know, that's what we need to all be open and listen to the other realities that are inside of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And because that way we're so much stronger.
Well, that's the theme of many Hollywood movies that are very popular, is you follow your own, you know, your own guidance and not what other people want you to do.
Unfortunately, that's not, you know, I don't see that so much on a daily basis.
No.
Maybe I'm around the wrong people. I don't know. Do you see that a lot?
Well, I see it because the patients that get to me followed their guidance or their family prayed for them. There's always prayer involved. There's always, you know, this is a great story. She writes me, she says, my computer hasn't worked for 3 years. Something woke me up at 3 a.m, told me to go to my computer. I looked you up. I found, I Googled breast implant problems, whatever, and found you, and then my computer isn't working again.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yes, that's incredible. It's amazing.
So, her guardian angels made her computer work for 20 minutes in the middle of the night. You know, it's always 3 a.m, too. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
If you get woken up at 3 a.m. with some thought in your head, go ahead and go do it. Don't go to the refrigerator and get something to eat. You know, go ahead and go do what you were told to do. That's when your angels speak to you.
That's yeah.
It really
that's
is.
I know. That's when we're most open to
it
them,
is. Yeah.
And,
so my life is filled with people who followed their guidance, or whose loved ones followed their guidance and got them here. Because sometimes, you know, when you're deathly ill, sometimes you need other people around you to help you. You know, I mean, you're not able to get up and go to a computer if you're, you know, so sick you can't move. You know,
right.
So you need others.
Right. We all need other people. You know,
right.
And we all just need to remember that it's, you know, moving forward is not difficult and it's not scary. And before I started writing this book, I felt stuck. I was stuck. I was.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was being knocked in my head with a 2x4, and all I was getting was a headache. And I knew there was a lesson, but I couldn't access it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, the things start happening. You know, my guardian angels told me exactly who to pick up the phone and call. And I said, oh, I'm stuck. Who can unstick me? I got Leah's name, picked up the phone, called Leah, and she lives in Arizona. And, you know, the next day I had written the beginning of this book because I was led. Because I was listening, and because I'm open, I was led directly to what I was supposed to do. Because, you know, sometimes we need, like as you say, we need somebody else to give us a hand.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started writing, I knew that that's exactly what I was supposed to do.
Right.
And I just loved writing this book. It was so much fun. And, you know, I think that what I like best after I finished it and read it, because a lot of it I don't even remember writing, I just wrote it, is that it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun to write, and it's fun to read.
Right.
And
it is.
And I think you thought so, too.
No, I did. It's great.
And that's important. It's an important thing to remember. That we're, you know, the child in us wants to play.
Mm-hmm.
We really, you know, we need to do that. We need to just let ourselves be lighthearted and have fun and do silly things and say silly things.
Right.
And I don't see nearly enough of that.
Well, I think we don't have, I mean, a lot of the playfulness in our life is with the other worlds.
Mm.
Would you agree? I mean,
I
it's like, it's that's where it comes from. When I'm walking down the hall,
mm-hmm.
and I hear, you know, the thoughts in my head that I know don't come from me because they tell me stuff I don't know, okay? But they're the ones that have the wicked sense of humor. They really are.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I have a dog who has a wicked sense of humor. And, you know, he and I are connected in a real interesting way. Just this morning, I took him down to the dog park, and I live by mm-hmm. a lake, and it's just beautiful. And I was listening to music, and I was singing, and he was jumping up and down in time to the music, and I turn around, and somebody's, you know, staring at me, which
mm-hmm.
is not unusual. But I've got a stick in my hand, and I'm, you know, conducting the orchestra.
Uh-huh.
Just probably
like the guy on like the guy on Perception.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fun.
Yeah. You know?
And I honestly, sincerely, from the bottom of my heart, don't care
right.
what anybody thinks. And I think that's it's important
yeah.
that we get to that place.
It is. It
and
is.
So how do we get to that place?
Well, I think it's, you know, I think it's a journey, and it may take more than one lifetime.
Okay.
But, you know, when you go through certain experiences, which I think, according to your book, you've been through.
I've been through a lot.
And when you realize, when you are so cut off from the normal third dimensional reality,
right.
that all you can experience is the other reality
mm.
and get guidance from that reality,
uh-huh.
I think that once you are aware of that consciously, because I think we always get guidance from that other reality. I just don't
oh,
think
yeah.
we're aware of it. I mean, I think like the baby that survives, you know, a serious illness is being,
right.
is being directed from that realm too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think once you experience it and then are able to recall it, that's when you can drop the worrying about the appearances in this reality.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean everything I wrote is absolutely true. And you know, I've been to hell and back, and I'm sure you know about Hep C treatment. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, two
You
years,
should have waited a few years.
I
they
know.
They got much better treatment. Much
I
better.
I know. Had I not been dying, I'm sure I would have.
Yeah, I know. You didn't have that option, but.
I know. They have some good drugs now.
They do. Yeah.
Which is wonderful.
Which is and wonderful, exactly.
And Hep C is, you know, I think there's a lot of people my age walking around with it.
There
who,
is.
Yeah, who don't know
they
it.
Might not,
or,
don't even know. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's true.
And, you know, I mean, I had it for, 40 years or so before, 30 years before it
yeah.
started to bother me.
Right.
But certainly, you know, even being in that state, a state of, like, maybe people who are on chemo, people who are on
mm-hmm.
heavy terrible medications that they have to take
mm-hmm.
in order to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there are other ways that we can help people to drop that, to get to the place where they can drop caring about what other people think. Because it's
mm-hmm.
such a freeing, it's such a free place to be.
Well, I can tell you what I thought about, and I developed these thoughts in high school.
Uh-huh.
I would tell my friends in high school, don't worry about what other people think of you. They're actually not thinking of you. Most of them are just thinking about themselves.
We're not that important to other people.
That's right.
That's right. That's a good point.
Well, that was obvious to me. And so I didn't find out till years later what people really thought of me, you know, because I didn't care then and I didn't know. But it you know, they didn't understand that I was then labeled later on as mysterious.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting?
That
mysterious.
Is.
Yeah.
So that's what people
mysterious.
Thought of you in high
that's
school?
That's what people thought of me, yeah.
Well, that's almost,
I mean,
that's
I've been
cool.
I've had that, you know, because with these reunions, we get back in touch with Facebook, and that's some of the,
right.
you know, some of the wording that's coming back, you know, on these classroom sites and stuff or classroom
right.
sites. And, you know, I wasn't trying to be mysterious.
Right.
I wasn't like, but, you know, probably the I really didn't care what they thought. I mean, they could think whatever they liked. I was aware that at the time, their world centered around them, not me. And
pretty early awareness.
Yeah. I think I might have come in with that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, we are all, and this is what I think the end game is. We are all truly connected. And so I remember in high school reaching out to people who were very different. People who were, one of my friends was extreme, or actually two of my friends were extremely intelligent. They have very, very high IQs and were kind of socially awkward, okay? And I remember reaching out to people who other people rejected and making them friends. Because we were kind of like we had an inner crowd thing going on. We were the hippies, you know that group.
Yeah, I was one of them.
But we included people that were different on purpose. And so when I read in your book that you were always attracted to the people on the fringe, I kind of laughed. I go, yeah, me too. They're a hell of a lot more interesting.
They are interesting. The rest of them are boring. And to this day,
that's right.
You know, to this day, I think, you know, there's a lot of boringness out there.
There are.
And
people trying to conform.
Exactly.
You know, and not being true to themselves. I think as long as you're true to your inner self, your guidance, the path you're supposed to be on,
mm-hmm.
you try to be kind to others, you try to be, you know, a good neighbor, you know, someone
right.
that is contributing, not just, you know,
mm-hmm.
using up air and water and food.
There are
and not bringing
that,
not giving anything back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that's what you need to do. And but most important is the lesson that is in your book, and the lesson that I feel is that we need to be in touch with the guidance that's coming from within. And if you feel like you said, you feel like, you know, you got a 2x4 hitting you and you don't know why, or if you feel very lost and ungrounded and don't know why, then you need to get back in touch with that guidance to see what's next. Because what it means is you're in between missions, you're in between assignments.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I knew that, but boy, you know, all I had to do was reach my hand out, and there's
mm-hmm.
the answer. That's
right.
Not hard to do.
No, but people don't understand that they actually do have a guidance system within
right.
them. It's within. It's not outside. It's within.
Right.
And that guidance system is connected to all that it is throughout space and time, not just in this little block of time-space continuum, but throughout all space and time, and that we truly are connected to a vast realm that is able to give us help, able to solve our health problems, our financial problems, our relationship problems, and all you really have to do is follow your guidance. And so you should be working on you know, getting access to the guidance and listening, right.
Right. And it, you know, why is it so hard to just be silent and listen and not question our inner self, not question what comes up for
right.
us?
Right. Right.
You know, I think there's a lot of stuff that goes through people's minds that they question or dismiss. We
mm-hmm.
need to pay attention to ourselves, because it's not, you know, the answers are all there. And they're coming from other realities.
Yeah, but you can ask for a sign. I'm going to tell my sign story now real quick.
Okay.
A friend of mine wanted to borrow money. She was a doctor. She seemed to be kind of wasteful to me, but She wanted to borrow money, and so I asked for a sign. I want to help people, you know, but I didn't want to give her money if it was going to interfere with her lessons. So I asked for a sign from the universe, and so I'm watching Saturday Night Live, and this guy comes on with a sign, and the sign says,
no.
Give me all your money. Give me some money. I have spent all of mine. So I call her up and say, no.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny.
It was a sign.
Oh, that's hysterical. I said, no.
I said, no.
Oh, that's great. That's a sign.
That's a sign.
Oh, my gosh, what a great story.
So,
yeah.
But the point is, if you ask for a sign, one will be given,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
because consciousness can do all sorts of stuff right in
right.
front of you. I mean, you might see a big sign on the side of a truck. Sometimes
yeah.
that happens. You
TV,
might see,
right?
you know, something on the TV, you know, but you'll
That's
get a sign.
Funny.
And so I followed it. And I to this day, I don't regret it because I asked for a sign. I got it. I followed
that
it. What else can you
so
do?
Funny.
You know?
Was she, funny. Was she upset?
She never spoke to me again.
Oh, my God.
That's okay.
Yeah, right. It is
you
okay.
realize, Hillary, I don't care what people think.
I know that is so
I
funny.
Just want to do the guidance thing.
Right.
She obviously didn't need to be my friend.
No. No, absolutely not. That's
anyway,
a great
it's kind
story.
Of funny.
Yeah.
It was, yeah. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Yeah, sure. My website is surrealistictrials.com. There's also a Facebook page, and it's Surrealistic Trials. And anybody who might want to email me can email me at Hillary, H-I-L-A-R-Y, talks@yahoo.com. And I'm happy to discuss. I love to discuss these ideas and it's just fun, and you have been an absolute pleasure to talk with. Thank you so much.
Oh, you have too. Thank you. Yeah, I really enjoyed your book. It is very entertaining. And,
thank you.
I often interview people that have wonderful ideas, but their books are not that entertaining.
Well, I have to have fun, and
it
had to be fun to write, or I wouldn't have
it
done
was.
It.
It was, yeah. Yeah,
it was.
Right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And thanks
Alrighty.
So much for having me.
Well, thanks, Hillary. Take care. This
you
is
too.
Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we're going to be interviewing Joan Serio, Hardwired to Heaven. Download your divinity through your heart and create your deepest desires. The next week, your true voice, tools to embrace a fully expressed life. Then Dr. Calden will be on with Create a Toxin-Free Body and Home Starting Today. And then on the 30th, over Labor Day weekend, we have George Lobonio, Alien Mind, The Thought and Behavior of Extraterrestrials. This is one of the most fascinating books I've ever read. In August, the Noetic Science Meeting will be on Thursday, August 21st at 7:15 p.m. at the Dunwoody office. Our guest speaker will be Catherine Silverton, and she'll be discussing astrology and its role in consciousness. And the Millennium Healthcare event is on Tuesday, August 26th at 7:15 at the Dunwoody office. Dr. Mike Greenberg will be discussing how to eliminate stress and showing a video presentation followed by a group discussion. I did want to mention that at Plasticos, we now have the La La Laser, which is good for fat reduction and tightening up the skin and many different parts of the body. And we also have our laser in, which treats pigmented lesions, vascular lesions, acne scars, leg veins, and a host of other things. So if you are interested in any of this, go online to look at our newsletter at www.plasticos.com. Of course, it would be helpful if you live in the area of Atlanta. Thanks a lot. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show.